it's one of the original people. These people paved the road so us new young people can come in and take all the glory for it. So we just need to remember who started us off. A lot of old families, and we're just proud to come after them and be a part of Raven County's wine history.
It was really neat. We opened, Luke and I opened the 1999.
Yes.
Tannat, and it had their signatures on there.
Yep.
That was really cool.
Yeah, bottled history.
When you pour a glass of wine, you aren't just tasting grapes and sunlight. If you're in the right place, you're tasting a story that spans generations. Today, we're headed to the northeast corner of the state to a vineyard that proved the skeptics wrong and put Georgia on the world's wine map. We're talking about the pioneers who brought European soul to southern soil. I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Raven County, in the northeast corner of the state, is known as the farm-to-table capital of Georgia. And now when I say northeast corner, I mean northeast corner, like right in the corner. Today, I'm in Tiger, Georgia, which is about 12 miles south of the North Carolina border and less than 10 miles from the South Carolina border. Make sense? And this is where I met Lenny Vitello, the owner of Tiger Mountain Vineyards. Now, Lenny came from the corporate technology world, but he found something in these mountains that a computer screen just couldn't capture.
I fell in love with the place almost immediately. I didn't know this existed. We had been doing quite a few summer vacations in the Flowing Rock area and various parts in the Carolinas. And I had no idea there weren't Georgia mountains, to be honest. And it was a real real eye-opener to come and see how beautiful North Georgia is. And I think it's still, I mean, I know a lot of people know about it, but I still think it's a hidden gem. So,
Lenny took over the vineyard in 2022, but the roots here go much deeper. Tiger Mountain Vineyards was the first of its kind in Georgia. A pioneer that decided to grow noble European grapes where others only saw wilderness.
The Ezra family, when they planted European vinifera, vinifera being a European wine grape, we were the first vineyard to successfully have a harvest and turn it into homegrown Georgia wine. 1998, we had a harvest, and 1999 is our earliest vintage. A couple other vineyards, which won't be named, try to lay claim to that distinction, but we have verified that we're the oldest vineyard producing European vinifera here in Georgia.
Now, Lenny will be the first to tell you that he doesn't make the wine alone. He's a big believer that a business is only as good as its people. And when it came to finding a winemaker, he didn't look at a stack of resumes, he looked at a bottle.
Fortunate enough to have met Luke, our winemaker, who you have to give very spoken with. Young guy, and very impressive. I think one of the things that I'm able to do is spot talent, and I just knew pretty quickly that Luke was special. It was a, never forget the interview, it was awesome. So I come from the computer world, technology world, corporate world, right? And I didn't show up with a resume, did not show up with a tie. But he did show up with some wine he made. And so we spent 30 minutes worrying about how he crafted that wine and what made it special. And what a resume that was.
That winemaker is Luke Anderson. But here's the interesting thing about the team at Tiger Mountain. Luke didn't just find a job here. He brought his whole crew with him. Luke, Chandler, the tasting room manager, and Sean, the head chef, weren't just colleagues. They were all college roommates.
And then Chandler finally broke up with his girlfriend. So then I was like, oh, now he's willing to move. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy route, but we all ended up back in the same place. He's actually a guy I roped in to come into work here.
Oh, really?
He was an old college roommate of mine.
Okay. Yeah, he makes it fun.
Yep, same with Sean, actually. Sean was an old roommate of mine, too.
They call themselves an adventure crew, and they mean it. When they aren't in the cellar or the kitchen, they're out exploring the very mountains that grow their grapes. I even remember them pointing to Tiger Mountain, and they saw it, and they're like, we're going to climb that.
Mountain right there. Now Chandler in there, he climbed Tiger Mountain.
Yeah,
up the hard way.
I was with him.
You did it.
Yeah. Yeah, and Chef was too.
Okay, so you got an adventurous group here.
Yeah. Awesome. You got to be to work in this sort of industry.
And let me tell you that physical adventure isn't just for the weekends. Farming is a workout. While we were out there, I actually overheard a local physical therapist who was visiting the vineyard joke about the intense labor it takes to move these heavy tubs of grain.
At my age, my sense of balance is not good enough for my experience.
As a physical therapist, I found my new exercise for balance. Yes. So I just got to carry around a tub of grapes to all of my patients home and say, okay, new balance exercise. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll put a little cane up there and say, you hang on to here and start smoking grapes.
And then you get the drink.
Right.
New balance exercise? I like that. But moving these grapes is just the beginning. To truly understand the future of Tiger Mountain Vineyards, you have to look at the research block. This is a scientific playground where they are testing 32 different varieties of grapes to see which can best handle the Georgia humidity.
This is the research block at Tiger Mountain. We currently have 32 varieties grown in here. Some of them are tried to be grown in Georgia. Others haven't been tried before. Right now in the earlier stages, we're seeing the capabilities of susceptibility when it comes to mildews. So you'll see some vines that are much more vigorous than the others. Mm-hmm. And that's just allowing us an opportunity to study the vines, their natural resistance to mildews and just how vigorous they grow. In about 3 years, we'll be having grapes and then we'll be able to measure wine quality. And we'll see how much difficulty the vine gave us during that time period, and if it would be fruitful to plant on a massive level.
Part of that research involves finding a signature grape for the region. Because while Georgia is famous for muscadines, Luke believes there is a European variety waiting to be the mountain's North Star.
Studies, every kind of wine growing region in the world has its own grape, okay. Right? It's kind of its main grape that does excellent there. Malbec in Argentina, Shiraz in Australia, you know, Cab Sav in Bordeaux, France, and Nebbiolo in Italy, and so on and so forth. And I feel like that grape hasn't necessarily been discovered for this region, this area yet. And so that's kind of one of my goals, is to, you know, discover that grape and also make the best wine out of it that I can.
Here at Tiger Mountain Vineyards, I find myself sitting outside a beautiful 100-year-old red barn that is the hub of this entire operation. Before this was a place for fine dining and wine tastings, it was a dairy farm. It's a perfect symbol of how Georgia agriculture evolves.
So this barn is over 100 years old. It was in the Ezard family for six generations, who is the founding family of the vineyard. And it was originally a dairy farm with a bunch of cows. And so this used to be full of cows right where we're sitting right here. And they, you know, produced milk and cheese and butter and all that sort of things. And eventually once John Ezard, once his father passed, John Ezard is the founder of the vineyard back in 95. After his father passed, he came back and didn't want to farm cows anymore, so he decided to convert it all into a vineyard.
John Ezard decided to plant European Vitis vinifera here, but he also kept a local legend on the property, the Norton grape. And the Norton has a bit of a dark past.
Norton was the most popularly planted varietal in all of America prior to Prohibition. This is for you.
Oh, okay, thank you.
But during Prohibition, they ripped almost all of it out in the country because they replanted it with table-eating grapes like Concord because they couldn't make money off of making wine anymore.
That makes sense.
Right? Legally.
The vines at Tiger Mountain aren't just any Norton vines. They're actually cuttings from the very first vines replanted in America after that dark period ended. Luke calls them the babies of the oldest vines.
The first replantings of Norton in America happened at Horton Cellars in Virginia back in 1989. And our Horton vines came from cuttings from those plants. So we have the babies of the oldest Norton vines in America.
Wow.
So, okay.
As we move from the history in the fields to the craft in the cellar, the science starts to get really technical. Winemaking is a 24-hour cycle of heat, sugar, and yeast, and occasionally a little bit of cheating Mother Nature through a process called chaptalization.
So what do you use the sugar for?
Raising alcohol content.
Okay.
So like prior to starting the fermentation, if you know the natural grape sugars weren't enough to get it over, you know, like 11-12%, then add sugar and that raises the alcohol content.
Nice.
It's not a flavor thing. It's simply to chaptalize is what they call it.
Luke is also experimenting with mad scientist techniques to get the perfect color for his red wines. You'd think adding white grapes would lighten a red wine, but it actually does the opposite.
Because white grape skins can also improve color and structure in red wine.
Oh.
You'd almost think it's the opposite,
but
that's not the case. It actually helps to improve the color deeply. It encourages the fermentation kinetics so they continue to interact with each other and gives a little more unique flavor profile as well.
And they don't let anything go to waste. They're even taking the skins from their Viognier grapes to create a high-proof mountain brandy.
Actually, with our Viognier skins, I'm making a brandy out of those.
Oh, cool.
So I used honey, sugar, and water along with the Viognier skins after they were pressed, and that's creating a brandy that I can then get distilled and then make it to use or use it to make port wines, you know, your dessert wines, white or red.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I'm trying to use every piece of the cow, as they say. Yeah.
While Luke is in the cellar, Chef Sean is in the kitchen, proving that the roommate dynamic works just as well with food and wine pairings. From baked brioche croûte to crab cakes, the menu is designed for a total sensory experience.
I didn't know you spoke French.
Ah, see, oui.
It's a symbiotic relationship, you know. The more I understand food, and the more that helps me to understand wine and pairing the two. And you know, same with him. The more he learns and understands wine, the better that he can match the food to their different flavor profiles.
Now, the highlight of the day was when Luke reached into the wine club library and pulled out a piece of history, a 1999 Tannat. This was from the very first vintage. And as he opened it, we saw the signatures of the founders right there on the cork.
And so on this cork, you can actually see the founders' names, Martha Ezard and John Ezard. And I can't quite make out these other ones.
That's me.
And you see Bill and Lucky Stack, right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so that's their names.
I hope they see
right
this.
There as well. Yeah.
I hope they see this, yeah.
And so, yeah, this is essentially, you know, one of the first wines ever produced from this vineyard and in North Georgia as a whole.
Luke warned me that a wine this old is a delicate creature. It doesn't need to breathe. It's been doing that through the cork for 20 years, and you have to watch out for the sludge.
But, and so, over time, a lot of the grape solids and mm-hmm. the tannin and some other things precipitate out into the bottom of the bottle. And so, in a really old bottle like this, you might be able to see it at the right angle, but there's a good bit of sediment just kind of right around this area.
Okay.
And because of that precipitation over time, due to the micro-oxidation through the cork.
Right.
And so towards the end of the bottle, it's kind of slimy and sludgy, and you don't really want to drink that in this old of a wine.
Whether it's climbing mountains together, perfecting the science of chaptalization, or honoring the babies of America's oldest vines, the team at Tiger Mountain is proving that life's journey is best shared with friends.
Our motto here is the best is yet to come. And hopefully, with the time you spent with us here today, you can see that the best is yet to come.
For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the gpb.org website. That's where you'll be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.